Committee to order. Today's date is June 7, 2019. The time is 8:28 a.m. The purpose of the meeting is approve the April 17, 2019 regular session minutes of the Complaint Screening Committee. Ms. Poe, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, Chairman. Mr. Donaldson?
Present.
Dr. Brundage?
Present.
Dr. Flowers?
Present.
Thank you, Ms. Poe. Are there any changes, additions, or corrections to the regular session meeting minutes? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the April 17, 2019 regular session minutes?
I make a motion.
I second the motion.
Discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign? Motion carries. Any objection? Let's see. All in favor of the motion carries. Do I hear a motion to adjourn the Complaint Screening Committee?
I so move.
I second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign? Meeting is adjourned at 8:29 a.m.
Is the Ms. Folks, is the meeting on the drive?
It is. It's up on the board member materials. It's the ARC mini meeting June 7, 2019.
Board member materials. I'm looking on the disc.
It's not on the disc. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. No worries. I know you sent it last. You sent it via email too, right?
Yeah, the agenda, yes.
Which wire is it here?
It's copper.
Down to Dr. Flowers, please.
Hey.
Dr. Flowers, sir.
Here comes Lisa.
Oh. We'll stack up in there.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good.
I guess there's this copper open.
Which wireless do we use?
Good morning.
Good morning. Which wireless do we use?
Copper.
Okay, I would like to go ahead and call the meeting of the Application Review Committee to order. Today's date is June 7, 2019. The time is 8:29 a.m. The purpose of this meeting is to approve the June 3, 2019 regular session minutes of the Application Review Committee. Ms. Folks, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Malott?
Here.
Dr. Meyer?
Here.
Are there any changes, additions, or corrections to the regular session meeting minutes? Okay. Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the June 3rd, 2019 regular session minutes?
I so motion.
Any objections? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Do I hear a motion to adjourn the Application Review Committee?
Motion to adjourn.
Second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned at 8:29 a.m.
The time is now 8:30 on June 7th, 2019, and I call the meeting of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Could we please have a roll call, Ms. Folks?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dr. Bohansky?
Present.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Mr. Donaldson?
Present.
Dr. Flowers?
Present.
Dr. Brundage?
Present.
Dr. Malott?
Present.
Ms. Shreve? We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Please note the time stated on the agenda are approximate. The board makes every effort to begin proceedings at the scheduled time. The board may suspend the discussion of one agenda item, proceed to a timed item, and then return to the former agenda item at a later time. Licensees who attend board meetings may receive continuing education credit for their attendance. Credit may be used to fulfill the ethics requirement. For psychologists who wish to receive CE credit for attending this meeting, forms are available at the table by the door and/or from a board staff member. In order to receive credit, please register on the CE roster, complete the 3-page CE record form, have the first page stamped and initialed by a board staff member, and keep that page for your records. Give the other 2 pages summarizing the meeting to board staff. Please remember that you must stay until the end of the morning session or the afternoon session to earn 3 credits. You must stay for the entire morning and afternoon session to earn 6 credits. The board encourages everyone in attendance today to provide feedback by completing the board assessment form. Please place completed survey forms in the survey box located on the table in the back of the room. As ever, I want to recognize board members for their hard work over the past month, especially the hours spent in preparation for this meeting, as well as the hours spent in our various committee activities and all of dozens and dozens of pages that we have to review in preparation for each meeting. I'd also like to acknowledge the efforts of the board staff again. We couldn't do it without them in helping us with all of the hard work that they are continually doing. Special thanks to Krishna and Kathy for stepping in to assist after Heather's departure. As you recall, she went from head to feet. Now working for the podiatry board.
That's a good one.
Had to make notice. Some of us think it's a demote. No, I'm sure she'll be a wonderful executive director there. I'd also at this point like to welcome Jennifer McSalen as the board's new deputy director. Ms. McSalen has joined us in May. Jennifer, we look forward to working with you. And she is sitting to the right of Ms. Jones and comes to us with behavioral health experience, having spent a bunch of time working with the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners. Mm-hmm. So welcome, welcome. And we would appreciate any help to keep us in line that you can provide.
Thank you very much for the warm welcome.
Especially me. call to the public. Moving on to agenda item number 4. Ms. Poe, is there anyone who's requested to speak?
No, Chairman.
Thank you very much. We can then move to agenda item number 5. Ms. Kahn, could you provide an update from the Attorney General's office?
I have no update to provide, Dr. Bohansky.
We're moving rapidly through our agenda. I like this. Agenda item number 6 is the consent agenda. A member of the board may remove an item from the consent agenda. Are there any requests to remove any items from the consent agenda? Hearing none, we will move on. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
We have a motion from Dr. Brundage. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second from Mr. Donaldson. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, aye.
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 Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. Thank you very much. We will then move on. We have a, let me check the clock here.
No, we are a little early. We have 10 minutes.
We have 10 minutes, so we can, for a timed item. So let's go down into our latter portion.
Item 10.
And see if we can knock off a couple of these. We'll start with 10. Discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding renewal application submitted by Rebecca Gillsby, PsyD, license number 004753. Ms. Jones, would you provide an update for the board on this?
Mr. Chairman, board members, Dr. Gillsby submitted a renewal application in a timely manner. and she did provide a yes answer, and I did follow up with her. I would prefer not to discuss it in an open session, but I'll be happy to answer any questions. I provided a memo outlining her desire to disclose the situation, but she advised that she is not practicing at this point, and she's not been told that she should not practice, but she's just asking for a renewal. It's hard for me to say a lot in open session. I apologize.
Well, we have the materials, so I'm comfortable with making a motion to approve her renewal.
Okay. If everyone's had a chance to review the material privately, and you're comfortable, we have a motion by...
Dr. Malott.
I know Dr. Malott. By Dr. Malott. Is there a second?
Seconded.
And we have a second. By Dr. Meyer, is there any further discussion? Dr. Flower.
Yes, I'm wondering if we could ask her to advise us when she wants to return to full practice, and if at that time she feels she's able to perform full practice duties.
There's no restriction suggested. This is a straightforward renewal. We are either going to approve the renewal or not.
I mean, she's just giving us due notice that she's, when she put it on, because it says yes, and she's already taking caution. I assume she will continue to practice with,
So
use her best judgment.
Most likely she'll respond as the need arises.
Yeah.
Yes. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Can we do a voice vote on this one?
Yeah.
All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Motion. Pardon? We have one in opposition?
It was a delayed aye.
Oh, it was a delay. I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Motion carries, and I would direct staff, please, to renew the license of the good doctor. We still have some time.
Do you want to do 13?
Dr. Meyer, would you provide an update to the board on item number 13?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. On May 3rd, 2019, the board approved the application for temporary licensure for the ECPP for Dr. Reese Williams. And...
She's caught you off guard.
No, she submitted a postdoctoral training plan, which was approved. However, the day after, on May 2nd, she submitted an updated training plan and agreement that extended the date of completion to May 6, 2022, which is the same date that her temporary license would expire. And it does not change. She still has a year to complete the ECPP. So my understanding is she was just covering the entire period of her temporary license.
Having reviewed the material, or is there anyone that has any concerns or discussion on this?
No.
Hearing none, is there a motion?
I motion to approve her training plan.
We have a motion by Dr. Meyer to approve the change in her training plan.
I second.
We have a second by Dr. Brundage. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Like sign. Motion carries. Thank you very much. And I have 5 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, would you like a legislative update, number 15?
Certainly.
Mr. Chairman, board members, as you probably know, the legislature, Senate died at the end, it was May 26th, I believe. So the session is done. There are some bills still sitting on the governor's office for signing, or governor's desk. Those should be wrapped up this weekend. There are several bills that did pass. the 1086, which is temporary licensure for health professionals, 1096, which is some data reporting for health professionals. It was a clarification from last year's statutes. 2118 regarding unauthorized practice, and of course the 2569, which is the reciprocity law for licensing, and then 2463, which requires us to add some verbiage to the applications and letters. I've provided copies of all the bills that have been passed into law, so you could actually see them yourself, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you very much, Ms. Jones. Are there any questions on any of the legislation which has moved forward this year? Dr. Brundage.
I would just like to make a comment that I would thank Ms. Jones and the Legislative Committee for their efforts. It's been an interesting year, and it's nice that it's almost over.
To say the least.
That's all.
Any other thoughts or comments? I'd have a quick question. Ms. Jones, are any of these pending legislations, I assume the governor is going to sign all of them?
I don't know.
We don't know?
There's two that I'm following. 2131, I believe, died. 1062 is the one that's still pending.
And that is related to?
That is the public disclosure of health providers' addresses.
Okay.
So we'll know about that next week.
Okay. Are any of these a potential burden to our staff or program?
Pardon?
Are any of these changes a potential burden to our staff or program?
Well, the reciprocity licensure will be require some additional work. We're going to have to create a new application, et cetera. But no, I think we can handle it.
I have a couple other questions specifically on that one. I understand that for those who are familiar with this bill, this essentially is saying that anyone who was a licensed psychologist for at least 1 year in another jurisdiction, another state, and has been practicing in that year without any complaints filed against them, essentially gets a free pass to an Arizona license.
If they're Arizona resident.
If they are an Arizona resident, correct.
So they can't just be a fly-by-night.
All right. And my understanding further is that they have to meet the education requirement that we have.
I don't think so, no.
Mr. Chairman, that is not my understanding. I will state that we are waiting on an AG opinion. I've been advised that AG's opinion should be out early July, and we'll have more information, but my reading of it does not indicate that they have to have an equivalent educational basis.
This is the concern I'm raising, is there are several states that license at the master's level. Can someone turn around with a master's license from Arkansas, move to Arizona, and we would be required to issue a Arizona license?
Mr. Chairman, board members, when the bill was first dropped, I did contact the governor's office and raised that concern. And they assured me that it was not to include master's levels. It has to be at the same educational level. But as far as the details of that it wasn't the coursework, but it had to be the same doctoral level.
What is the bill number?
That is 2569.
The second concern is there are several states that license non-healthcare psychologists, sometimes referred to as INO or general psychologists. These are people who practice with corporations and trainings and what have you for government entities, but have not the experience and internship, can get that degree without ever seeing a patient, have no intent to see patients. Yet if they're licensed in Illinois with one of those licenses and they have a doctoral degree and they are not a healthcare providing psychologist, could they pick up our license?
Mr. Chairman, board members, I am hoping to have an answer with that for that with once we get the Attorney General opinion.
Those, Dr. Flower.
That's another addition to there are people who are licensed psychologists in other states without a degree in psychology. It may seem weird, but we do see people with like degrees in education and so on, and 30 years ago or whatever, that was allowed in some places. And so I guess that would be another clarification. A doctorate in psychology would be a key issue.
So it does say when the person was licensed or certified by another state, there were minimum education requirements and, if applicable, work experience, clinical supervision requirements in effect, and the other state has to verify that they meet those requirements. And then, again, you know, there's a lot of vagueness.
Yeah. We have a time. I have one last piece on this is, who writes the rules for enacting this piece of legislation?
If there are rules to be written, Mr. Chairman, board members, if there are rules to be written, the board would need to write them.
So each board who licenses or certifies in this state will have to write a new rule section to cover this?
That is one of the questions I'm also waiting on.
Okay. If we could get answers to some of those, that might be something to our rules committee to be looking at in this next part of the year. Thank you. I'm going to, we can certainly come back to this if there's further discussion, but we do have a timed item at this moment, and I'm going to move to agenda item number 7, discussion, consideration, and possible action relating to an initial case review. At this point, I want to remind board members that the purpose of an initial review is for the board to determine whether there may be a violation of rule or statute. We're not ruling on whether it happened, but is it a possibility that there was there. The board may vote to go into executive session on any item on this agenda pursuant to ARS 38-431-03A2 to review confidential records and or ARS 38-431-03A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. Individuals wishing to speak on this matter must complete a request to speak form and provide that to board staff. You'll be provided the opportunity to address the board. Our first complaint on agenda number item 7A is complaint number 1834 pertaining to Dr. Padella. Are there any board members who are recusing from this case? Seeing none. Dr. Brundage, you're the lead board member for this agenda item. Would you please provide the board with a factual overview of the case?
Thank you, Dr. Bohansky. The case number 18-34 is with regard to Scott Padilla. I believe that's how it's pronounced. License number 4881, and Dr. Padilla was licensed in August 11th, 2017. The complaint was submitted by a patient's ex-husband of Dr. Padilla. Thank you. Ex-wife began counseling July or August of 2017 with Dr. Padilla. The complaint alleges that the ex-wife and Dr. Padilla had a sexual relationship during their therapeutic relationship. AC described reconnecting with his wife in 2011 and having two children within a three-year period. Stressors increased with his wife, and wife chose to reinitiate therapy and found Dr. Padilla in the middle of 2017. AC indicated that shortly after his ex-wife began therapy that, quote, their marriage began falling apart, unquote. Ex-wife appeared to be increasingly angry at the husband and blamed him for troubles in the marriage. AC attended one session with Dr. Padilla and alleges that his wife was attracted to the doctor. Shortly thereafter, he experienced concerns that his ex-wife and doctor were having an affair. AC spoke to his wife, and she denied any allegations of any sexual improprieties. AC then noted that there was a lot of texts and that his wife had been secretive with her phone. He had drawn up a draft of divorce papers in December, but things improved, and he accepted a position in Seattle January 2018. AC alleges that Dr. Padilla and his ex-wife text more frequently and had extended telephone calls, often at night during non-business hours for long periods of time. On June 25, 2018, AC alleges that he found evidence that Dr. Padilla and his ex-wife had a sexual relationship. He went through wife's journal, which he then confirmed in his idea of the affair and part of the journal entries I believe we've seen. Divorce was finalized November 26, 2018. Again, the husband alleges that wife confessed to her that she did have an affair with Dr. Padilla. Wife's last session with Dr. Padilla was April 25th, 2018, where it was alleged that there was prolonged kissing and oral sex. At this time, the wife then recanted that she had had sexual relationships, and at this time says no, it never happened. When Dr. Padilla received the complaint, he responded in a timely fashion. He firmly disputes any allegations that there were ever any sexual relationships. He did not have physical contact and had never engaged in sexual relationships either with her or any other clients. He has never had an emotional relationship with this woman, does not have a sister or know a Vicky, which was stated in some of her journal writing, and never been sexually abused, and never engaged in self-harming behavior, which was also noted in the journal entries. Licensee began seeing her July 2017 through Sunset Center for Change, and had received and concurred with a diagnosis of the previous therapist. He did acknowledge he saw husband for one session and thought that session had gone well. Sometime in October 2017, ex-wife contacted office and canceled all of her appointments. At that time, she expressed concerns that she felt an attraction to Dr. Padilla, that no one could help her, and that the doctor was manipulating her into, quote, needing him. Dr. Padilla spoke with her and urged her to continue because he saw this as a pattern of early termination was often a symptom of the diagnosis. November 28th, he discussed transference, and ex-wife expressed concerns that she had, quote, a crush on the doctor. Again, it was discussed on December 1st and February 28th, December 1st, 2017 and February 2018. Dr. Padilla acknowledges that after termination of therapeutic relationship, that ex-wife would contact him. And he did not see this contact as, quote, therapeutic. Acknowledges that he crossed boundaries. Acknowledges that he knew she would use a journal, however, was unaware of the context of the journal. On November 27th, board staff received communications from Wex's wife, who adamantly denied having an affair with Dr. Padilla. That is a brief summary of this case.
Thank you very much, Dr. Brundage. Ms. Poe, is there any request to speak on this?
Dr. Padilla would like to speak.
Okay. Prior to hearing Dr. Padilla, is the complainant present?
Not to my knowledge, Chairman.
Is the complainant AC available on the phone?
We expected him. I guess he chose not to attend.
Okay. Going once, going twice. AC, if you're there. And three times. Very well. We'll move ahead. Dr. Padilla, would you like to make a statement? Please come forward. Would you please introduce yourself to the board, speak into the mic, if you would?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the board. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to speak today. I only have a few things to say. Following the screening committee meeting, I feel as though Dr. Brundage gave me quite a bit of homework, a lot of things to think about, and going into the screening committee meeting, I had an attorney with me who had, you know, helped me prepare for that meeting, and I went into it feeling as though I had this sense of defensiveness about this whole process, and after that meeting, I walked away feeling quite humbled. That I had a lot of new information that I hadn't considered before that day. The comment that hit me the hardest was Dr. Brundage saying that I am a relatively young therapist in the field who got in over his head, who was clearly working with a client who required quite a bit of clinical skill to be able to manage effectively, and that that I lacked insight as to sort of the impact that the decisions that I made working with her may have had or did have, or what kind of optics that might create for anyone looking on to my behaviors and my approach with the client. And that really set me back on my heels, and I have sought consultation. I've sought supervision. I've done continuing education till my eyeballs bleed almost. And I just see that, you know, current me would like to shake past me for some of the things that I chose to do. That being said, I still maintain that the approach that I had with this client was always from a position of care for the client, wanting to make sure she was okay, and by making that such a priority for me, it blinded me to some of the potential pitfalls in those decisions. And primarily what I'm focused on is the fact that after she was no longer my client, I decided to maintain contact with her to be a support person for her as she transitioned from being my client in Tucson to being someone else's client in Seattle. I stopped seeing her in April of 2018. I believe that their divorce situation happened somewhere around November. But their relationship was a topic of conversation for the entire time I had seen her. He had drafted divorce papers in October of 2017, not in December of 18 when he says he did. I don't know what his timeline is based on, but I know that there's documentation in the chart, there's documentation in his own journal entry that he provided in the complaint he wrote, that October of 2017, which was the first month that I had been seeing her, they were already talking about divorce. So his allegations that my being her therapist was the reason why they had a divorce, that I don't understand how that could quite add up. But
a couple of minutes and wrap it up.
Sure. I'm not here to defend myself today. I'm here to acknowledge the insight that I did lack at the time. I acknowledge that there were boundary crossings, and I'd made a pretty big effort during the screening committee meeting to differentiate between a violation and a crossing, and the basic gist of that in my mind was anything that I did that might be considered gray area or cause for concern was not exploitive. It wasn't for my own personal gain. It wasn't for me to capitalize on some vulnerability that the client had. It was always for the client. It was always to make sure this person who was unstable and unsafe at times would stay as stable and safe as possible. So, again, I apologize to whoever I need to apologize for making those kinds of decisions, but I also know that it was coming from a genuine place of care for my client, and that's always been my priority. So I'm happy to answer questions. But
thank you very much, Doctor.
Thank you.
I'll now open it for questions from board members.
Dr. Padilla, I know at the complaint screening committee, it's nice to see you in your face.
You as well.
We had asked for checks.
Yes.
The ex-husband alleged that not only did you text through normal phone, but also Snapchat.
Correct.
And I'm aware that Snapchat evaporates after a short period of time. You have not provided that to the board.
Correct. I don't have that. The text, I deleted the texts. I didn't have, so this is another thing that I wish I could go back and undo. I treated the text conversations as confidentially as I would the conversations that we had had in our office prior to the time the text conversations occurred. And I didn't want those extensions of the conversations we were having in the office about her private stuff to be ever accessible to people who shouldn't have it or, you know, out there. And so Mr. C himself last meeting said, I don't know why somebody would delete texts which could potentially exonerate him if there was nothing to hide. And I agree with him. I wish that I hadn't deleted those texts. I wish I could provide you with every single one of them, because every single one of them was, again, supportive and intended to assist her in her transition to her new therapist in Seattle. I hadn't seen her since April 26, 2018. She was in Seattle. An affair that was being accused of me having. I don't know how that would have happened, because I was in Tucson and she was in Seattle with her husband and her children. So I would love to be able to provide those to you. I can't. The decision to go to Snapchat instead, Snapchat has a connotation that comes along with it, that it's this nefarious, secretive, whatever. I talk to my family and my friends with Snapchat. It's an app. It's easy. It's not this secret, let's be sneaky thing. The client asked to switch to Snapchat because she wasn't sure what her husband was doing. He'd already snooped into her phone and found her private journals and was being whatever he was being, and she chose to go that route rather than still open herself up to him and his whatever his intentions were. So again, I wish that I had those texts to show you. I think they would exonerate me, but I don't have them.
I noticed, and I didn't mention this in the initial review, that the material that she signed had indicated that you were completing your postdoc, and that the information said that you were still under supervision.
No, I moved here from Virginia. I had a private practice in Virginia. I had been licensed there for 5-6 years already. I came to Arizona, and I don't know why that is. There is, and I looked at that too. I don't remember if that's because my license was on its way to me, and so I wanted to have double assurance that a licensed clinician was overseeing what was going on. But that's not the case. And also, the client didn't find me. She was already seeing a therapist at the practice that I came on to work with, and her previous therapist moved to her own practice, and the client was there looking for a therapist, and I was asked to take her on by the established therapist that was already there. So the way that AC characterized her finding me, that, oh, she stumbled upon me. No, she was handed to me by another clinician who had already been working with her there. So I was not doing a postdoc. I completed my postdoc back in 2010, I believe. So, and I've never had a complaint. I've never had, and I work with high-risk population people. I work with self-harming, very, very suicidal, very high-intensity cases. Girls, boys, young, old. Never once has anyone had any complaint of impropriety. This is unfortunate. I understand, again, if Mr. C came across a journal written by his wife about these fantasies that she has about me, if I came across my own wife's journal who was saying things like that about her therapist, I would be irate. And I encouraged him, when he called me in June, to, if he felt that concerned, make a complaint to the board. Please, I would like the investigation process that follows a complaint to happen, because I really want you to know, so you can rest at night or whatever you need, that this didn't happen. So I encouraged him to make a complaint to you. And at the time, I don't know that he was intending to do that, but he waited until the divorce from his wife was final to then make the complaint, alleging that I had an affair with his wife, and that's the reason why they got divorced. It just, to me, it just makes my mind hurt. But I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not answering your question, maybe, but I am trying to.
Are there other questions from board?
Yeah.
Dr. Malat, please.
Dr. Padilla, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
The texting and, you know, the different ways we have to communicate these days is kind of mind-boggling. Some of us are a little older, and we use less of those techniques than others. My sons use them a lot, especially Snapchat. I still haven't learned that. But what have you learned about those techniques? You said you've done more continuing ed, you've done a lot of different things, and communications with clients.
So thank you. That's a question I'm glad that you asked. So I have learned that I don't want to do that anymore. I have a social media policy form now that I have included in my intake packet that people have to sign that says, I'm not going to text you. You have an office phone number that has a voicemail that you can leave voicemails at. I have an email address that you can send emails if you need to for scheduling purposes or, you know, last minute emergency type things. But this isn't the place for therapy. This isn't the place for you to unload your stuff on me between sessions. This has a purpose, and that's laid out very clearly. And I believe I provided that form in my response packet to the board. That is now established as part of my intake packet.
What about emergencies?
Depending on the emergency, I want people to utilize the crisis response center that we have in Tucson. I want people to use 911 if it's that big of an emergency. If it can't wait until I see you in a few days, then there are entities in place already in town that you can use for those kinds of things. What would an emergency be? Yesterday, I had a client who was a mother who was sick, who was intending for her husband to bring the kids to see myself and another therapist. And at the last minute, husband couldn't make it. And so she wanted to let us know, hey, don't sit there waiting for us. We can't get there right now. So she left an email. I'd say that's not an emergency so much as it's a last minute thing, but she wanted us to know right away. And I saw that email when it came right in. I was able to see it. If somebody is having a suicidal situation where they don't feel like they can keep themselves safe, again, that's where I want the CRC to be utilized. If they want to schedule an emergency session where, hey, you know, I know that my therapy session with you isn't until Friday, but I'm really going through some tough stuff right now. Is there any way you can fit me into your schedule? Because I feel like this is kind of an emergency type thing for me. Not a safety issue so much, but it's kind of pressing. Can I come in sooner? I'm happy to entertain that kind of stuff.
Thank you. Yeah. I have one more question. The client, you were working with this client. Did you seek consultation?
I do now. Yes, I...
No, I'm talking about then.
I was not. So, and yes and no. At the time, I was casually consulting with my peers, peer consultations, just sort of casually with anonymous, you know, hey, I have this client that is really kind of difficult. And the response I would get was, okay, sounds like you're doing it okay. And I really, truly don't believe that anything that I was doing with this client prior to the end of my treatment with her was questionable. I think everything that I did with her made sense. So anyone that would ask me, hey, is this something that you think I should be doing? Yeah, sounds good. It's including the fact that I chose to continue seeing her after she had made these statements about her attraction to me or her crush on me and wanting to cancel all of her sessions from that point forward. And me saying to her, you know what? Having an attraction for your therapist can be a reason to terminate, but it's not necessarily a reason to terminate. And this could actually be a learning place for you. You could grow from this because you're going to say, I have all these urges for you, and I'm going to maintain my boundaries and not let those be entertained and teach you that I still have positive regard for you, even though I'm not, you know, letting you come on to me or being seductive in response. And so I thought that this was a perfect opportunity for a cycle to be broken or a pattern to be broken of her believing that, you know, oh, if I start to have a feeling that isn't okay, I have to shut that down and anything else that goes along with it, the bathwater and the baby situation. I didn't want that for her. I knew that my boundaries were good. I knew that my my approach to her was intact, so I wasn't worried. It would take two to tango in that situation, and I wasn't looking to tango. And I told her that. And in the chart and in the notes, you see all the instances where the transference or the attractions, those things would be brought up, and I would immediately shut them down. I would validate it. I'd say, yeah, this is something that you're feeling. That happens. This is what we're going to do about that. I'm not having sex with you. We're not entertaining physical contact. Those things aren't going to happen. So now what? You know, you can quit therapy if you want to. I can't make you stay. But I sure as heck don't think that this is the reason why you should quit if you can learn and grow from this. Because her patterns in her past were all about being objectified and used and abandoned and objectified and used and abandoned and over and over and over again. I didn't want to be another one of those things.
Thank you.
Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I have some more questions. I was one of the people talking to you on the phone about a month ago. Just some clarification. My understanding is that there was Dr. Schwartz and Dr. Jaybert.
Mm-hmm.
Were they providing services to the client before you?
Dr. Schwartz was. I don't know what Dr. Jaybert's level of interaction with her was before that.
Okay, so the way you got involved was somebody else there was managing the case?
The practice is owned by Dr. Jaybert.
Okay.
Dr. Schwartz was one of the clinicians working there. And when I moved to Tucson 2 years ago, I joined the practice. Dr. Schwartz was on her way out of the practice, and I took over for a few of Dr. Schwartz's cases.
Okay. So this was
one of those.
One of them, okay.
Yes, sir.
And I noticed you talked about some boundary issues, and again, we on the phone talked about it, but there were quite a few. We got a record of phone calls I've allegedly made between you and the client. Some of them, like, well into the evening, one at midnight, and it's troubling. What kind of policy do you have as far as communication with clients after hours and for what?
Now there is no communication after hours, and for what? That again. So this client was very, very challenging for me because I don't believe that my experience working with folks with a BPD diagnosis it was ever at this level. I don't know that I had ever worked with someone with this intensity of the symptoms. And I actually had fears for her safety, and I had fears for her stability, and she did talk about drug use, and she did talk about alcohol use, and she did talk about these kinds of things. And to keep her safe, I found myself bending my own rules about, you know, if you're suicidal at 11:30 at night and I can help you not kill yourself, I would like to help you not kill yourself. Now, that's not my policy anymore. I would like you to utilize the crisis response center, and I would like you to utilize 911, or I would like that. But at the time, she or I felt that I would be the one to help her. And that wasn't out of an arrogance thing. That was more out of a bit of a desperation feeling. That's kind of what I've talked to my supervisor about, is that I had this intense feeling to help this person, and I don't care what time it is, and I don't care, you know, what day it is, or if it's on the weekend or whatever. If she needs me, I want to help. And, you know, but at the same time, I work until about 8 or 9 at night most nights. I'm there late into the evening, so the conversations that I have on the phone with people would be happening after 9 o'clock at night. I would be seeing clients until that point. So, again, it was, I wanted to make myself available to support and help her through what she needed help and support through, but that didn't happen on a 9-to-5 schedule. So.
Okay, but it sounded like a kind of some loosening of boundaries
at the time,
depending absolutely on, you know, what you normally allow and so on. And then again, I mentioned this during our previous meeting, there's some lack of clarity as far as the termination process, talking about once you visit me, I kind of always will care about you and would like to get updates and sometimes visit people. And so I'm just wondering if that's how it's normally done.
No, so I believe you're referring to an email from back in October of 2017.
Yeah, right? Once your butt hits the seat, whatever, I always care about you, and yeah. I get updates from people after we terminate, sometimes visit.
I would love, thank you, I'm glad I was going to address that as well. Okay. So this was probably 4 sessions in, and she was flailing around about how you're just going to abandon me too, and you're going to be one more person who I'm going to, you know, become attached to, and you're just going to discard me like everybody else has. And in response to that, I, as a means of comforting her that early on, that I wasn't going to abandon her, my response was, just so you know, I still do sometimes see people in Virginia, in my hometown, who I treated before. And, you know, sometimes, like, for instance, a couple weeks ago, I started seeing a client when she was 13, 14 years old. And a couple weeks ago, she graduated from college with a psychology degree. And I got a text message from her mother that said, that there was a picture of her daughter crossing the stage that said, "We did it. Thank you so much. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for you." And that was wonderful. I was so happy to receive that text and to see that picture of this client who didn't think she would make it past 16 years old. So that's what I'm referring to. Is I get updates on people. If I bump into someone at Target when I go back home to see my mom, that happened to be a client before, it's not like they don't matter to me anymore because they're not my client anymore. I am happy to see how they're doing or hear how they're doing or in that way. I don't go home to visit my clients. I don't set out meetings, hey, meet me at, you know, the Cheesecake Factory so we can catch up. That's not what I mean or what I meant. It was more to say, hey, I'm going to care about you as someone who was my client for probably forever, because I don't have many clients that I can't remember their names or what their deal was, because they all mattered to me. And I didn't want her to think that she wouldn't just because she, you know, she got better and then disappeared. That was her concern. That was
the idea would be, if there's somebody having a success, you wouldn't want to block the message saying, you know, I don't want to, even though you
care.
You know, got an advanced degree, I don't care anymore. Who are you? You're blocked. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Mark?
Dr. Dia, hi.
Yes, sir.
So there were records indicating you were on the phone with her several times, 30 to 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. You also stated that you did not characterize these phone conversations as therapeutic. So I'm having trouble distinguishing, were you providing telepractice, and could you clarify that for me?
Yes.
How could they not be therapeutic?
Sure. And so one of the conversations I had with my supervisor that I've obtained since this all has unfolded was that in my mind, at the time, I had this impression that once you discharged as my client, you're no longer my client, I'm no longer your therapist. So if I'm going to have a conversation with you after you move away to Seattle, and I'm no longer officially your therapist, and you're no longer seeing me on my couch, these conversations aren't therapeutic. And my supervisor kind of took me to task on that, and she told me that that's ridiculous. And I said, oh. I don't still believe that I was providing telepractice so much, but I do believe that what I should have done was never said in the first place, okay, you are no longer seeing me in person in my office on the couch, and that makes you no longer my client. What I should have done was say, okay, you are going to apparently need some transitional sessions as you move forward into your Seattle situation, and I am willing to do that. And I'm going to document those, and I'm going to treat them as though they are actual sessions that are just happening over the phone. And once the handoff, you know, the baton gets handed off to the new therapist, then that will be that. That's not what I did. I did not think of it as therapeutic, as a technical term, even though obviously supporting her and helping her maintain her stability was a therapeutic-y thing. It very well could have fallen under a therapeutic umbrella.
But so looking at the dates, it looks like you had a 41-minute conversation on April 19th and a 37-minute on the 20th, which would have been before she discharged and moved.
And I believe in the chart there are documents documented. Those were documented, I believe. Those were not?
I do not believe so.
Okay, because I do.
I didn't see that.
I believe that the phone calls that were made before the discharge were.
The 20th was not. The 19th. You have a note from the 19th, but it doesn't say anything about
the phone call?
Yeah.
Okay. My recollection was that the documenting of the conversations, whatever was happening, ended after she was no longer my client.
Okay.
If there's not a note in there, I apologize.
Thank you.
Dr. Brundage.
I need clarification because I thought that you, when you came here, that there wasn't previous experience. So you were licensed as a psychologist in Virginia for 5 years.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And then were you licensed as a therapist before then?
No.
Okay. So help me understand how you saw someone at age 13 clinically and received a notice when they were 22 that they graduated.
Maybe she wasn't 13. Maybe this was just high school, whatever year it was when she was in high school.
And your license is in good standing? Was in good standing?
It was. Yes,
is it current at this point?
No, I've let that. Okay. I don't plan to go back to Virginia. So.
All right. And so you've never received supervision up at, before this case with anyone or consultation?
When I was working at the group practice I worked at for three and a half years, I had supervision there. I did my postdoc there, so I had supervision there and then ongoing there. When I had my own practice, I didn't seek official, you know, professional supervision relationships, like where you pay somebody to be your supervisor. No, but again, I also had peer consultations, and I would frequently say, hey, I've got this case. I need somebody to bounce this off of with other PhDs and PsyDs and that.
But I'm looking at present.
Currently in Arizona?
Yeah.
No. Okay. No, and I've only been here for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. So, again, I did seek peer consultation and bouncing ideas off of other people who were in the field, but I was never, like right now, I'm paying somebody to be my supervisor. She has, I think her license number is 420 out of Arizona. She's been doing this for a long, long time. And I sought her in particular for that reason, because I didn't want another young, you know, fresh out of wherever, relatively inexperienced therapist, to be someone telling me how to do things, because that's kind of me. So I sought her out specifically to be someone who has a lot of experience and wisdom, I think, to shed on.
And can you share her name?
Yeah, her name is Sydney Arkowitz, PhD in Tucson. Yeah.
Are there any other questions from board members? Hearing none. Thank you, Doctor. This is a time now for us to begin discussion and deliberation among ourselves.
Mr. Chairman, if I may interrupt, I apologize. I do believe the complainant joined us by phone just a few minutes after we asked if he was present.
Okay.
I did.
Thank you, sir. This is AC.
Yes, it is.
Would you like to make a statement, sir?
Yes, and I'll keep it relatively brief. I believe that my prior statement is a matter of record at this point, and that covered the majority of it. I didn't hear all of Dr. Padilla's testimony, but there were a couple of things that I did hear that make me a little, that make me question his version of events. One is that he had mentioned that they had only switched to Snapchat after I had snooped in her journals. But that's actually not true. They were communicating in Snapchat since the time we had moved to Seattle, or very nearly thereafter. I can't say exactly when that occurred. But that was actually part of the reason why I, the night of June 25th, when I woke up in the middle of the night after we'd had a fight and agreed we were going to divorce, did go through her journals, is because when I went through her text messages, they were all deleted, which was bizarre, and I knew that all the rest of their communication had been in Snapchat, so there was no record. So there was literally zero records of their communication, and that was why I went through the journals and found what I found. Also, he had said that after we had relocated to Seattle, that he, at least the way it sounded to me was he was implying that they no longer communicated. That was definitely not the case. Again, that was part of the reason I was becoming so suspicious and had confronted her about it several times, was not only were they communicating on a very regular basis, like near daily, but she was also, for the first time in our marriage, leaving the room completely and going out on the balcony, shutting the door so I could not hear any of the content of their conversation, be out there speaking for him, to him for fairly long periods of time, you know, in excess of 15 minutes at a time, sometimes up to an hour. He also questioned why I waited until after I filed our divorce was finalized before I filed the complaint. The reason for that is because she threatened that if I were to complain about Dr. Padilla, that she was going to not only make our divorce as painful as possible, but that she was going to try to make my life as miserable as possible. And here in Washington State, they don't provide actual custody of our children, but we have a parenting plan, and in that parenting plan, I am by far the primary caregiver for our children, and I didn't want to waste a bunch of money duking it out with her in the courts over this issue, so I waited until the day it was done, so that way she had no more leverage over me, and I could do what needed to be done and not have to worry about protecting myself and my children. And he also said that he had spoke late at night because he believed she was suicidal and would harm herself. The one thing that kind of troubling me about that is that I saw my own therapist here in Washington as this goal unfolding, and there was a period of time where she was threatening suicide here in Washington, and my own therapist, I consulted with her about it because it was obviously very stressful, a lot of concern, even though we were getting divorced, she was still the mother of my children, and she said it was really common, especially among this population, for them to threaten suicide with no intent of ever following through. And so to me it's a little bizarre that if Dr. Padilla has as much experience with this population as he does, that he wouldn't have thought of that and thought that maybe he was actually enabling her by engaging her when she was threatened, getting her more attention when she was threatened that, rather than withdrawing, which is what my own therapist suggested I do to protect myself. I just wanted to add all that out there for the record. At this point, I am not looking for any particular outcome. I know for me and for my mental health and for me feeling as if I did the right thing, you know, reporting this was what I needed to do. I'm here to answer any questions if you guys have any for me. But beyond that, you know, I trust you to do the right thing. Then one last thing I do want to add, though, that this also bothered me. Dr. Pita said when he and I spoke, when I called him and confronted him and when I discovered all this, that he had encouraged me to report this. That's partially true. Initially, he had actually discouraged me and said, this is my license, this is my livelihood, I could lose my license for this. And then at the end of the second conversation, the second phone conversation we had about it, he said, if you feel that's what you need to do, then, you know, do what you got to do. But it's a little misleading to state that he was actively encouraging me to report it, because I remember very clearly that he was trying to emphasize how serious this was for him. And the way that I interpreted that was that he was trying to discourage me from escalating it there, and was and in that phone conversation kept repeatedly trying to reassure me that this hadn't happened, he wouldn't do it. And when every time I brought a piece of evidence on my end saying this looks very suspicious to me, saying I understand that, but I wouldn't do that, and this is my license and this is my livelihood. And that's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions from board members of the complainant? Dr. Brundage.
Not a question, more of a comment. AC, thank you for the information. It seemed to be organized, and it was easy to access some of the information that you had presented, so thank you.
Other board members, any questions? For hearing none, thank you, AC. And Dr. Patera. So now we will begin discussion and deliberation on this case. As I indicated earlier, the focus of this initial case review is to determine whether there may be a violation of statute or rule. Dr. Brundage, would you like to begin the deliberation on this matter?
Thank you, Dr. Bohansky. Dr. Padilla, I am still gravely concerned about what I'm hearing today. I kind of gave you a little bit of a short, not a pass, but at least a thought of you as a new therapist. When you're telling me that you've been licensed for 5 years and do not know the rules about termination of patients and then moving forward, I'm extremely alarmed. I do believe that there has been violations. You know, certainly boundary violations that I perceive as very severe. We have a log, page 99, in our material. That would be 99 out of, 345 pages. That indicates that there were long conversations, sometimes late at night. And, you know, again, as a therapist, I can't imagine being on the phone for 41 minutes with a patient at 10:30 at night or 11 o'clock. We do have an attestation from the ex-wife that she did not have sex with you. And we're looking at a classic he said, she said. Certainly her writings are concerning, but as we know, journals can be a time of expression and are not always fact. I do believe that a boundary violation exists. I still am kind of janky about the sexual things, and I believe that this should go to at least informal. I'm really concerned. So I'd like to hear from my counterparts.
Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I also concur that there are some significant issues here. Indeed, it's troubling that, you know, late-night conversations repeatedly out of concern, apparently, but it's still like at some point there needs to be some kind of boundary of when you call, who you call, and I believe within some of the paperwork there are even instructions about if there's a crisis, here's who you call. But with this client, that I guess the rules were a little different. So I'm concerned about that. And also saw within the email string that, you know, apparently when things went south, at that point you became more, the boundaries became more firm, and the client was angry, what's going on here?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure.
Oh, it's at some point, you know, when you saw going south as the complaint went forward, and you said we need to stop communicating like this, it needs to be more formalized, something to that effect. You know, she seemed very angry about that.
I'm sorry, am I allowed
to? I think we're supposed to just discuss it. She just seemed really angry that what's going on, you know, felt free to call you Scott rather than Dr. Padilla. I mean, all these things, it just sound as if things have become way loose. I know within the email strings, I didn't see anything that looked sexually related, you might say. Troubling about the kind of lack of clear boundaries and how things were handled. So I share those concerns, but I'd be reluctant to go to an informal in regards to the sexual allegations. I don't think there's adequate information to proceed on that, but certainly on the boundary issues.
Dr. Brundage.
Two comments. I think that an informal hearing is a investigation. It is not, you know, again, with the lack of firm boundaries, that oftentimes the sexual improprieties can come up, and I do believe that it still doesn't feel clear to me. The other grave concern I have is that during this whole case, you did not seek consultation or supervision or sit down with a colleague and say, I am over my head. This would be a very, very difficult case. Even for seasoned therapists, this is kind of that area where when I have something like that, the first thing I do is I pick up the phone and I consult. Once you learned that she had feelings for you, your approach arguably would, but it kept going. And, you know, the information that you got, your reply to the emails were usually fairly, you know, I didn't have any burning problems with the replies. But I can't understand why you didn't feel frightened and want to protect yourself in getting some things. And it just, I don't get it. I would have been scared to death about the fifth session.
Mr. Chairman, point of order, please.
Yes.
This is a discussion deliberation for discussion with us.
Yes.
Okay.
Not directed towards the
All right.
client.
Thank you. I'm just concerned.
Dr. Meyer?
So I also see potential violations for telepractice and record keeping, so as well as the boundaries.
Mr. Donaldson.
Yes, I agree with everything's been said here. In addition, what really concerns me as a public member is that the sessions were terminated, yet they were still carried on. What concerns me, there's no record of Snapchat. We have no idea whether Snapchat was one time or 100 times. So that really bothers me. And then what bothers me also is it doesn't sound like there was any record keeping of the Snapchat. As I understand it, I've been on this thing for, 18 years? And we've held psychologists to task when they're having conversation with clients and they're not keeping a record of it. So it really concerns me. What are we not seeing that we should be seeing in this case?
Thank you. Any further discussion? Dr. Brown.
I'd like to make a motion that this case move on to informal interview based on violations.
Could you list those, please?
Yes. I would like to continue to include Arizona Revised Statute 32-206-1, 16F, sexual intimacies or sexual intercourse with a current client or patient or a supervisor or with a former client or patient within 2 years after the cessation of termination of treatment. For the purpose of this subdivision, sexual intercourse has the same meaning prescribed in Section 13-1401. Arizona Revised Statute 32-2061, 16E, engaging or offering to engage as a psychology on activities not congruent with a psychologist's professional education, training, and experience. Arizona Revised Statutes 32-2061, 16O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice, and ARS 32-2061, 16DD, violating an ethical standard adopted by the board. The motion carry. So
could you repeat those, Dr. Brundage? Just the alphabets. You don't need to read the whole thing.
Okay. 16G. 16O.
I don't know.
And 16DD. And 16DD, I believe, is the boundary violations. I did have concern about the paperwork, but I believe that the far moving issue is the relationship that was not established or defined.
So G, O, and D, D. Okay.
So not F. You said F originally. Did you end up withdraw the F?
F is
sexual intimacies.
I would not vote for that.
Yeah, I would not vote for that.
I would be okay with O and DD.
Okay.
But I would struggle and would have to not concur.
Does everyone feel that?
I agree. So without, you can do an amendment, or I'm not sure.
Okay. Any other sense?
We don't have a second to your motion. You're just making the motion. So, anyway, go ahead. And I don't know. We have our AG here, so, but I haven't heard a second.
If you would state your motion, I think what we're looking to hear is O and DD.
Are people comfortable with that? I would like to state the motion, refrain again back to O and DD.
And is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion or clarification?
I don't know if this is appropriate to say right now, but one of the things that Dr. Padilla is engaging in is supervision, which I think is very appropriate, mm-hmm. given. And he is welcome, I guess, to talk to our attorney, and just since you're not represented, to, you know, entertain a consent agreement if he wishes regarding the supervision. So I just want to just state that. So,
mm-hmm. That's an option he has.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think he's aware. Is there any further discussion? We have a motion and a second. Hearing none. Do we need a roll call?
Yes, please.
Ms. Poe, may I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
Dr. Flowers?
Yes.
Dr. Brundage?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Mr. Donaldson?
Yes.
We have all 8 yeses, all. Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Dr. Staff will be in touch with you following this meeting regarding the next procedure that we follow. I'm going to call for a comfort break at this point. We have a timed item at 10. And I'd like if we could be back in position for our town.
Everybody back?
Are back in session, please. We have a timed item at 10 o'clock.
It is now 10 p.m. on June 7th, 2019. This is the informal interview of Ruth Toronto, SID, in case number 1831. Board members, the materials for this agenda item are located in your electronic folder. Can I have Dr. Toronto please come? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I forgot to recuse, but I need to recuse.
I was just about to ask if there's anyone who needs to recuse. Dr. Flowers will. Doctor, are you represented by counsel today?
Yes, good morning. Charles Hover.
Thank you. And could you introduce yourself, Doctor?
Yes, my name is Ruth Tenrero.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Bohansky, Chair of the Board, and the other board members and board staff will now introduce themselves.
Ramona Malott, academic psychologist.
Joe Donaldson, public member.
Diana Davis Wilson, behavior analyst.
Matt Meyer, academic.
Janice Brundage, psychologist.
And if counsel?
Sabrina Kahn, Assistant Attorney General.
And staff?
Jenna Jones, Executive Director.
Jennifer Michelson, Deputy Director.
Kathy Phelps, Licensing Specialist.
Krishna Poe, Administrative Assistant.
And on the phone?
Dr. Ryan Davey, Behavior Analyst.
Thank you, sir. This proceeding is being audiotaped, so everyone must speak loudly and clearly, and please, only one person at a time. You've received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. Board members have read all the materials and any additional submissions. If it's necessary to refer to clients or patients during the interview, please do so by initials only. I will read the allegations from the informal interview notice, and then we will interview you. It is the complainant present? No. Doctor, the allegations brought against you in case number 1831 are as follows. ARS 32-2061-16H for failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to the psychological services you provided to a client or patient. I will now swear you in. Raise your right hand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Doctor, do you or legal counsel wish to make any opening remarks?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Please.
From the outset of this case, Dr. Tenrero has been very upfront and acknowledged that what the board is concerned about in her record keeping was, in fact, problematic and rises to a level of a violation of the board rules. Understanding that from the get-go, even before the first meeting with the board, Dr. Tenrero set about to remediate that by taking some extensive course in continuing education, which we've provided to the board on record keeping and on clinical supervision. She has also taken the Board of Behavioral Health's clinical supervision course and was re-upped by that board, the board that did file this complaint, through 2022. Additionally, the board, after filing this complaint and considering the matter before it with JW, actually condoned and approved Dr. Tenrero continuing on as JW's clinical supervisor for his licensure before that board. I think that is important for this board to keep in mind, in that the very complainant about Dr. Tenrero has itself reviewed her credentials, her activities, and is okay with her continuing on as a clinical supervisor, not only for JW, but for all of their potential licensees. I think that that reflects well on Dr. Tenorero's efforts to remediate the situation, to understand what is going on, and to move forward as a competent and a sought-after clinical supervisor. What we would like to discuss with the board and have the board consider is all of the work that Dr. Tenorero has done after acknowledging the problems here and understanding that this board has to memorialize its concerns to issue a letter of concern. Additionally, if the board wants to memorialize its thoughts on what kind of education should be used to remediate that particular problem, that it also consider entering a non-disciplinary order for education. But we would ask that if that is in fact what the board wants to do, that Dr. Tenorero be able to submit for approval as meeting those requirements the work that she has already done. We are not here to contest any concern that the board has that has been heard by Dr. Tenorero and dealt with. I would like to raise one other point. There was some concern as to whether or not Dr. Tenorero's activities actually resulted in JW not getting his license. I have checked on that, and in the board's own materials, the complaint from the Board of Behavioral Health, it's noted there that there were also concerns with the clinical supervision that he received before Dr. Tenorero. Not an excuse for what Dr. Tenorero did. I just wanted to point that out, in that in any case, he was not going to be able to get his license at the time that he applied because of concerns not only with Dr. Tenorero but with the other LPC clinical supervisor. So that Dr. Tenorero's activities, while problematic, were not the sole cause of him not getting licensed. With that, I would invite you to question Dr. Tenorero about what she's learned, what she understands, and how things are going forward. If the board is interested, I have two letters of comment from the other two persons that she was a clinical supervisor for who were approved. There were no problems with their applications to the board, and they are now both independently licensed. Candidly, they do talk about Dr. Tenorero's learning process because they were going through this about the same time that JW was, but both are very highly complimentary of Dr. Tenorero and think that she is a benefit to them and to those seeking clinical supervision and licensure going forward. So keeping all of that in mind, I kind of circle back to the letter of concern being, I think, the most appropriate response to this complaint when all is taken into consideration.
Thank you, sir. Doctor, do you have any comments you'd like to open with?
I don't.
Thank you. To begin our interview process, we'll start with a summary of the case by our lead board member, Mr. Donaldson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The background to start off with is a licensed associate counselor, and JW submitted his licensed professional counselor LPC application to the Arizona Board of Behavioral Health Examiners, BBHE. Dr. Tenorero provided application applicant JW supervision. BBHE claims that Dr. Tenorero may have acted unethically and unprofessionally by not completing the verification form and signing the verification without verifying the hours. BBHE voted to forward the complaint to the board for further review of Dr. Tenorero's conduct. We have been over this before, and the board members have all read all the stuff that's inside of the form, and by the information provided by her attorney, I can prolong this, drag it out, and bore us all to death again, but nothing has really changed. Dr. Tenorero has recognized that from the complaint and what's been submitted today is that she sees the error of her ways and has done major things to adjust it. So to bring the summary to a close, I just want to repeat what has been, as was reviewed in February 20, 2019, the CCS review and disposition expressed that concern that Dr. Tenero lost documentation of the supervision she provided and expressed concern that she did not retain adequate records, which we saw here again today. CSE voted to forward complaint number 18-31 to the board for possible violation of ARS 32-2061H for possibly failing to or refusing to maintain and retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to the psychological services provided to a client or patient in ARS 32-2061P for possibly falsely and fraudulently claiming to have performed a professional service, charging for a service or representing a service as a licensee's own when the licensee had not rendered the service or assumed supervisor responsibility for the service. And that, Mr. Chairman, concludes my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Donaldson. We'll then proceed for with questions for Dr. Tenero. Does any board member have questions? Hearing none.
I have one. Dr. Tenero, when we first met you, you said that you weren't going to do the supervision anymore, but now it seems like you grasped hold of your destiny and have decided to provide supervision. Do you feel confident in that you can do that and still maintain your commitment to was it Horizon?
Yes.
And from what I've read in the materials here, that it looks like you've come up with a process in which you can maintain documentation and recording of the process for supervision of your clients.
Yes.
Yeah. So you feel very confident now that that you can keep on going.
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? I'll ask just a couple. Doctor, in the process of going through a lengthy system that we have here, what have you learned?
Oh, wow. I learned that when I first took on the supervisory role, that I didn't know everything I needed to know to do it well. And since then, I've had multiple opportunities to, through continuing education, coursework, through this painful experience, I've learned a lot more about what my responsibilities are as a supervisor, including the record keeping, including whose responsibility it is to keep track of client contact hours and supervision hours. It's my responsibility. It is not the supervisee's responsibility. I've also learned, you know, when you read that section on the definition of unprofessional conduct, you know, you read it and I didn't initially think of what possible situations would look like in terms of violating any one of those definitions. And I have a much better idea of what that means now.
Excellent. Doctor, do you work in public behavioral health?
When you say public, what do you mean?
Agencies.
No, I work at the prison in Florence.
At the prison?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't recognize the title of the, of the agency. I thought you had changed to a different position. I have no more questions. Are there any more questions for the doctor? No. Very well. Is the Board of Behavioral Health the complainant here?
I don't think so.
No. Very well. At this point, Doctor, do you or your legal counsel have any additional statements to make?
No, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now deliberate. Mr. Donaldson, would you like to begin?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to hear from the other my other colleagues here on the board.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Malott. I just want to add that I think Dr. Tinrero, I just wanted to say her name. I like your name. she has really shown due diligence, you know. I think it was not her, you know, the actual act of supervision, but all the record keeping and that goes with it. And times have changed, and, you know, the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners has very strict documentation guidelines. And I think she's learned from that. And I also just want to add, while the supervisor's responsible, please instruct your supervisees that they're also responsible for documenting and keeping track of the records. I always tell my students that they are responsible as well. You know, it's a two-way street, and I don't want them to get off the hook of not keeping track of their records and, you know, keeping it with them for a long time or forever. It is a hard lesson to learn, especially when you have to come before the board. And I am, you know, just want to state that, you know, when I read the statute violations, when those were quoted by Mr. Donaldson, I really didn't think it rose to that level of a statute violation. I mean, there is definitely cause for concern, but when, you know, it said the harm, I was writing it down, and I was just thinking, you know, I didn't see that, so I just want to state that, too.
Thank you, Dr. Malott. Dr. Brundage.
I think you've done an admirable job in taking a situation and learning from that situation. I think that at this point, the question is it a statute violation? My understanding is that if it is, then we have to do disciplinary action. Is that correct?
You have a non-disciplinary option as well to issue a letter of concern or non-disciplinary CE.
So even if it's a violation, we can do that?
So if you want to discuss your statutes, we can do that in executive session for legal advice.
I think that's a critical key.
Any other comments by board members?
I'd like to just make a motion to...
Let me make my comment first.
Oh, comment.
we're still a comments. I'll ask for motions in a moment.
Thank you. Sorry.
When we're working with our colleagues in the counseling profession, we submit ourselves to another set of rules that we often don't read. A lot of psychologists don't, to be honest with you. And they get in trouble easily. And that's because the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners, a distinctly different unit of regulatory authority, has a set of very prescriptive procedures, well in advance of what this board would require for supervision at a pre-doctoral or postdoctoral residency level. That makes it incumbent upon us as psychologists, who are often looked at as the senior members of clinical teams, to be well aware of the challenges and requirements and pieces that these folks are required to go through, and we, in fact, are required to meet if we're going to provide not just competent supervision, but all of the hoops that go with it to meet the needs of that board. Unfortunately, people jump into doing supervision sometimes without knowing that. I'm fairly convinced you know that you've learned it the hard way, that you've gone through an extensive amount of training to the satisfaction of that board, where they have reissued your supervisor credential or updated it, and see fit that you have met the standards of information gathering and supervisor education that they require. So I am not certain that there's much more that we could ask of you here. So those are my comments. Is there anyone on the board who would like to make a motion?
I'd like to move that we issue a letter of concern, and that includes a non-disciplinary order of continuing ed, of which some of the hours completed, and we may want to clarify that, be considered since they were related to supervision and the cause for concern.
Thank you. Do you have a specific number of hours in mind, Doctor?
I would say, 20 hours.
20 hours. Oh, specific supervision?
Yes, related to supervision.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second.
So,
we will open it up for discussion and clarification.
So, Dr. Malott, it was a non-disciplinary order for 20 hours of supervisory continuing education. These are in addition to the hours required for licensure renewal?
That's why I said I wanted to ask, how many hours did the person, did Dr. Tenorio complete to date on the supervision? I know she has, and I'm afraid that, there's a couple of good ones, and it needs to be related to the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners.
Sure. There was general continuing education on record keeping and general...
how many do you know?
You recall your CEs?
A record keeping, 3 hours, and I did 2 clinical supervision trainings that were 6 hours each. They were all day. And 1 that was online that was 3 hours.
That's 18.
Okay. So maybe an additional 10 hours. I don't know. I'm looking for guidance from my colleagues. I said 20.
I'm going to ask, Doctor, did you take the out of the Trauma Institute Rob Roden's 6-hour training?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
you. Your in-person 2-day training, who did you take that from?
Well, one was from Dr. Carol Fallander, and the other one was from Dr. Lawrence Seidman.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And I just note that in those hours are not the courses that she took specifically for the Board of Behavioral Health certification process.
So she did that as well?
She did that as well.
Okay. I feel like she's...
I think there'd be a lot of redundancy in making her take another 20 hours.
I think so, too.
That was my comment.
Yeah. Oh, okay, then I think we can
don't cut that
those
out.
Hours.
Yeah. Okay. The motion has now been pared down to a letter of concern.
Based upon record keeping pursuant
yes.
to ARS 36-20616H. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll second that.
And we have a motion that's been modified and seconded. Are there any further discussion points? Hearing none, do we need a roll call vote?
No.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to break here for a moment to get Dr. Flower back in the room. Please note in the voting that he was recused from this matter. We have a bit of time before another timed item that's coming up at 11. So we will go back to our welcome back, Doctor.
With this cake.
Let's go back to the top of the list, if we could, please. And we have agenda item number 11, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding a request from Dr. Goldfein regarding modification of a proposed amendment to a consent agreement in case number 1615 and clarification regarding terms of the consent agreement. Ms. Jones, could you bring us to date on this request?
Mr. Chairman, board members, I did estimate that to Dr. Goldfine that it would be later in the day. If you would like her to participate, I'll need to reach out to her and try to reach her.
We'll put this one on
later.
Hold.
Yes, please.
And we will take it up when the doctor is available. Let's go to number 12. Is that?
Yes, sir. Dr. Pyburn. She's available. If you have questions, I told her that the board may be able to discuss it without her.
Well, please provide us with a summary.
Yes, sir. On September 14, 2018, the board entered into a consent agreement, an order for probation, supervision, continuing education, and a practice restriction in regards to two cases involving Dr. Pyburn. The terms of the consent agreement included probation for 12 months, 12 hours of CE in the area with 6 hours in the area of ethics and boundary issues, and the other 6 hours in record keeping and informed consent. The order also contained a practice restriction from providing court-ordered or related services during the probationary period, and she was to meet with a practice monitor 4 hours each month for the first six months, and then that could be reduced provided the monitor supported that. The licensee could also request early termination after 6 months with the monitor's recommendation. She began meeting with Dr. Redivo, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, sorry, in September of 18. He has provided quarterly reports on a timely basis and has outlined their work. He is discontinuing their monitoring effective June 3rd. She has completed 12 hours of CE, and I did approve those hours. And she has requested that the board terminate her probation as she has completed the terms of her probationary requirements.
Very well. I recall this case. Is there any discussion? Dr. Brundage.
I would just like to point the board to page 3 out of 15, which is a letter assessing the final practice monitoring session by Dr. Redivo. He appears to be supporting this type of decision, and since he's worked closely with her, I think we need to at least acknowledge his advice.
Very good. Is there any further discussion? I would entertain a motion.
I move that we accept the request to terminate probation.
I have a motion to accept the request for termination of probation. Is there a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Now discussion from anyone, points of clarification or issues? Hearing none. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Dr. Bohansky, I know we have another 30 minutes before our next timed item. I'm just wondering if Dr. Logide is in the audience. We asked him to come. He is here, so I'm wondering if we could hear his it's a application for licensure question.
And are you presenting?
No. Oh, I am. I thought Dr. Myers was. Okay, I am presenting.
Item number
20.
Item number 20. And if you could bring us up to speed, Dr. Myers.
I have to talk to Ms. Folks about that. Thank you, Dr. Logai, for coming. I was wondering if that was you, so I thought, you know. Though you're welcome to stay the whole day, this is a great opportunity, so.
It was assigned to Dr. Meyer.
It was? No. I see my name, but we both can share it. It's fine.
However you'd like to work it out.
Whoever wants to take it, I apologize.
And, Dr., just a review. So Dr. Logide is seeking approval for licensure after passing the EPPP. It was forwarded to the board for review, and there were unusual circumstances regarding his timeline that he provided based on his hours. He was approved to sit for the ECCC. As we indicated, he's passed the ECCC. He needed to verify his postdoctoral examination. There was a lot of back and forth regarding his verification on the postdoctoral information. Dr. Logide asked whether the verification must be sent by the supervisor or can it be sent by the supervisor's staff. He was told as long as we can track who the sender was, we've accepted completed verifications. It couldn't be found. Later on, it was found. Dr. Kemper sent in concerns, who's his supervisor, regarding how the postdoctoral verification happened and, whether there was just a lot of back and forth and uncertainty, and so I wanted to hear directly from Dr. Logide regarding that process. Dr. Myers, do you want to add anything?
Yes, please. So the supervisor, Dr. Kemper, did complete a verification of postdoctoral experience that would be sufficient, but she also expressed concern about possible modification of the training plan documentation, so it's the concern about why was the plan modified, the one that you submitted. So that's the concern that we'd like to have you address.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. First off, I'm still in residency. I'm doing a second year with Dr. Nichols now in the consortium, so doing a two-year neuropsych. So this was just claiming the first 2,000 hours that I completed in the consortium to use for licensure. I only needed 1,000, but I submitted 2,000 to make sure I met that 40% requirement as well, or went well above it. And then the document that we're talking about, the one-page summary training plan, was a summary of the 10-page consortium document that we had contract with all of the training plan, the specific APIC requirements for the consortium, and then other business items that the consortium had. So for the ease of the board's review, I summarized the training portion of it to meet the requirements for you guys to review, make it as easy as possible. I didn't change anything. I didn't add anything. I didn't subtract anything. It's the same information. If I made a mistake in summarizing that document, then I apologize. But I would never try to misrepresent any information and for the hours that I've accrued.
Was Dr. Kemper aware of that summary page?
It was made before I left there and submitted to the board, and it was in the stack of paperwork that she reviewed and signed. I don't remember exactly when she signed it. I couldn't tell you.
Well, there's not a signature on it.
So right. We're talking about which page? It's early on, right?
Mm-hmm. The summary?
The summary, the single page that Dr. Kemper objected to having ever seen.
What page?
I think it's page 14.
And I've learned now that anything like that, I'm going to get a signature on, but I didn't get her signature on that one. It was in stacks of paperwork when we were completing the transition between her site and the next site. So
this postdoctoral resident training plan, that is one page, You created that. That is not your formal training plan.
Right, and then it's the summary of the 10-page consortium contract that includes the training plan.
And so?
Which was also submitted to the board with the completion certificate of the 2,000 hours that I was claiming for licensure. And I've completed another 1,100 hours so far with Dr. Nichols.
Your internship was with whom?
Pre-doctoral?
Yes.
Yeah, at Wake Forest University Medical Center in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
So this is a postdoc?
I understand that. So how many hours did that involve?
1,000.
And then you chose to do a consortium-based postdoc of 2 years?
Yes, sir.
And your supervisor for the postdoc?
First year was Dr. Kemper, second year is Dr. Nichols at both of their practices.
And it's essentially the consortium of practices that provides this, and it really comes together under one consolidated training plan, which is what you're referring to as the 10-page?
Right.
And that's the official document?
Correct.
That's the one that's signed?
Correct.
And the confusion is caused by you creating a one-page summary to make it easier for us?
Correct, sir.
Thank you. Are there other questions for the doctor?
This may be an observation as well. It's when I see something that says postdoctoral resident training plan, I don't assume that's made by the client, not the client, by the student. I think it was being done by the supervisor. And but indeed, the other ones that were submitted, the long version, certainly looked appropriate.
Yes, sir.
Looks like there wasn't, saw your name but not the date when you signed, but sometimes that's forgotten. I guess in my bureaucratic brain, it sounded like you were trying to make it more clear what you did with the one place, because you didn't do the full 2 years you signed for.
Right. And
with them.
I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, but basically, yeah, that's the troubling thing. It it would imply it was done in conjunction with Dr. Kemper, and it wasn't. But indeed, I saw the certificate of completion of the postdoc, and you know, appropriate signatures for that. But that's kind of the only glitch I see.
Okay, and so I'm just, I mean, I'm putting words in your mouth though. But you decided, since you met, no, so you did 2,000 hours with Dr. Kemper?
I did more than 2,000.
Okay.
Because the 2,000 was the beginning of October, and I didn't leave her site until the beginning of November.
Okay, and you're still continuing on with your postdoc, you said?
Yes, sir. Or yes, ma'am.
So what's how many total hours are you planning?
It'll be a total 4,000 hour.
Okay.
To meet Houston conference guidelines for neuropsychology.
Okay. Okay. I'm fine, but I just wanted to, you know, because of the concern raised.
The official training document is the 10-pager from the consortium. Neuropsychology Division 40 guidelines recommendation is 2 years as a neuropsych. And he's working toward, instead of 2,000, of which he really only needs 1,000 under our licensing laws, but he's going for 4,000. My recommendation to you, quite frankly, is keep the documents that are signed, sealed, and official, put them in an ASPPB document bank, credentials bank, so there will never be a question ever again, no matter where you go, about anything, and whatever you do, don't make anything else up.
I've learned
to
that.
Make it easier for anybody, we're actually fairly bright people and can figure out the 10-page one. Please don't get yourself messed up by doing that. Keep it simple. Get your stuff in a credentials data bank. They're free. Put that stuff in there, and there will never be a question in front of a board in this North America.
Plan is to do the ABEC one, and I'm also 3/4 of the way through HSP.
Excellent. Do we need a motion on anything here?
Yeah, we do need to approve his case for licensure, you know, because we did not, it wasn't part of the consent.
Do I have a motion?
I would make a motion to accept.
Dr. Meyer makes a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
We have our application committee. Motion second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you. Motion carries. Thank you, doctor, for trying to help us.
Welcome to the licensure.
Thank you, ma'am.
And if you stay the day, you get continuing ed, so.
Now I have to go to the consortium board of directors meeting. I'm okay. On that board, so.
Okay, thank you.
That's where I'm off to now.
And provide them with the same advice.
You got it, sir.
Okay, thank you. We have some more time. We can go through some other pieces.
Mr. Chairman, may I recommend number 16?
Yes, you may. And if we look at 16, this is action proposed five-year rule report for the Governor's Regulatory Review Council. Ms. Jones, would you provide an update for us?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, board members, for the last several months, we have been working on a rule review of the rules with Jeannie Han, a rules writer, and the Rules Committee. Also, the Behavior Analyst Committee has been involved in reviewing their portion of the rules. This report to you is the required document that GRC requires every 5 years for all agencies to submit. And today I would be seeking your approval that we file this on behalf of the agency. We hope to have it heard in July. It looks more like that would not happen. It would be August. We understand there is a possible backlog at GRC, so it may be September. But we would like to get it filed and completed. Thank you.
That's a good thing to get done. Do we need a motion to do that? Or can we just direct the staff to?
You can probably memorialize it in a motion since it's going to go. Voice vote as well.
So moved.
We have a motion from Dr. Malott.
Seconded.
We have a trio of seconds. Dr. Brundage was the loudest of the crew. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Let's get that five-year review thing into the GERD process so that we can put that puppy to bed.
Thank you very much.
Excellent.
Would you like to go to number 17?
Yep, I'm saying let's do that. This is discussion, consideration, possible action regarding an update regarding the status of compliance with recommendations contained in the Sunset Audit Report. Boy, have I got some recommendations for them. Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chairman, board members, I believe you're all familiar with the Sunset Audit Report or performance review that we underwent earlier this year. At the last meeting, you asked that I provide monthly updates to the board on the progress we've made meeting the recommendations. So I decided to create a project tracker for each recommendation. So I've attached that as page 2 of 4 for your review. And it's just to try to outline, I took the 15 recommendations that they made and then tried to guesstimate a time frame and where we are in that process. Currently, we have, we're continuing to implement numbers 6, 11, 12, and 15. Number 3, and number three will continue to track. Several of them were just continue what we've changed and move forward. Recommendation number one, I expect the legislative committee to meet later this month to discuss the fingerprint clearance card for initial license and renewals. And then number seven, we are doing a time study for each staff member as to how much time they spend on renewals, licensing, so that we can address their recommendation to determine if we're cost effective or what the actual costs are for licensing.
Excellent. We can't possibly know that because of the other legislative changes that have taken place before. And we go a year and see what that's going to impact.
Yes, sir.
Very good. Are there any questions for Ms. Jones on the update to the Sunset Audit Report?
What about 8? I'm curious. The recommendation.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Malott, number 8 involves more efficiently licensing the BACB, the behavior analyst. We have that slated to do in July, and I hope to report that to you in August.
And I'll be consulting with the committee? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Just something to state for the record. We've had considerable discussion on that in the past, and I think Ms. Diana Davis-Wilson, Dr. Davis-Wilson was present for many of those in the audience. And the board does not want to give away all its authority to an external organization, and so I'm hoping that will continue to be considered, while focusing on efficiency.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Malott, when the audit report was presented, I had strong concerns about them asking the board to delegate their authority. So we will definitely keep that in mind. Thank you for the input.
And I'll also add that I have expressed the historical feedback from the board to the committee and made sure that was carried over as well.
Okay, thank you.
There's no need to be part of the psychology board if it's going to be a task that's assigned to a national board. And I can't believe the state would want to give up sovereignty over licensing professionals under its jurisdiction. So I think we need to be careful of what direction that goes. Very good. Thank you. And we look forward to continuing reports on our progress toward compliance with our sunset audit. Let's move ahead with number 18. Discussion, consideration, possible action regarding a request to terminate probation for Lynn Neudemacher, PsyD. Ms. Jones, could you update us?
Mr. Chairman, board members, Dr. Neudemacher entered into a consent agreement in order for probation, continuing education, practice, and restriction and monitoring. This was done in November of 18. The terms of the consent agreement included probation for 12 months, 12 hours of CE, a practice restriction from providing supervision during the probationary period. She was to meet with a practice monitor, and she could request early termination. In November, she obtained the services of Lynette Livesay, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, to serve as her monitor. In March, she submitted certificates for 17 hours of CE, which she completed, and it was in compliance with the terms of the order. We have quarterly reports from Dr. Livesay, and she also recommends termination of the probation. Dr. Neudemacher has requested that the board terminate her probationary period and return her license to an active status, and I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Are there any questions on this request for Ms. John? Hearing none, is there a motion?
I would make a motion that we accept the letters and terminate probation for Dr.
Is there a second?
I second the motion.
We have a motion by Dr. Brundage and a second by Dr. Flowers. Is there any further discussion, concerns? Hearing none. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. Thank you. All right. Can we at least get part of 19 in the next 10 minutes?
Absolutely.
Let's go and try to hit that. Ms. Jones, would you provide an update on 19 A, B, and C?
Mr. Chairman, this follows up to, and board members, this follows up to a rules committee meeting. And I apologize, I do not have a memo on this. I can certainly do one for the next meeting if you want to postpone this item, or we can talk about it today. The Rules Committee had a couple of straightforward questions as to whether or not the board wanted to continue to require reference forms as part of the application process. My research indicated that the states reporting to ASPPB are split. It's a 50-50 split. Not everyone requires the reference forms. Some states still do. So it's just whether or not the board wants to continue to require those as part of the application process.
And we require, they actually go out of date. If someone doesn't complete the application process, then they have to start over. The references have to be updated. And what we've found in this is that the stale references, some of them 3 years, 4 years old, we were really looking for somebody who knew the person's work recently. I like that. And I would like to see that kept personally. Other thoughts? Dr. Flower?
Mr. Chairman, I think in keeping with safety of the public, it would be a good idea to have the current information to the degree possible, as we already require.
From a research standpoint, can I? It's a very, very poor predictor. Uh-huh. And so even from a safety of the public standpoint, you're not going to find somebody who's going to give you a bad reference. So it's really an additional burden on the staff. And I think in all our, at least in my, 14 years now, I don't think I've seen, maybe there was one, I don't know, but I don't think I've ever seen a bad reference. And that's true in the literature as well. Of course, if you do get a bad one, then that's probably very telling. But we do not get bad references. It is work on the staff, and we're looking to ease the burden. We even get good references from people who are under investigation by other boards and when they're applying to our board. So anyway, that's just my 2 cents.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Donaldson.
Yes, my experience with references is, like has been said, they're mostly positive, except for they say, if you have any questions, please call me. And I can guarantee you, if they're from Tucson, that you better call them because they're going to call you. And then they turn about with a negative reference. But when you ask for one, they'll make a real nice one for you. Unless they say, please call me if you have any questions.
Other thoughts or concerns? Your pleasure. Give this back to the Rules Committee to come forward with a recommendation.
I think the Rules Committee was interested in, you know, what different board members thought. You know, I mean, we can come with a recommendation, but if it's not, you know, I mean, this is a yes-no kind of thing. And I'm curious if people want to just make brief comments what their thoughts are.
Mm-hmm. Other members?
Sure. I don't see a benefit to including it from the application review committee.
And I would second the literature that supports that's not an accurate, reliable measure of someone's performance.
Dr. Rutledge?
I guess I'm old-fashioned. I kind of like a looky-see letter because it gives us some ideas. I also acknowledge that I've been here a while, and I don't think I've ever seen an accurate or reflective of poor quality. I certainly want to lighten staff's burden.
Let me ask this question. Does the PLUS system require reference letters?
Mr. Chairman, board members, I don't know that answer. I'd have to research that and find out.
The reason I bring that up and in that we're, as a state, suggesting we participate in this 64-board coalition and have a common application so you don't have to go filling out different stuff all over the country. If that PLUS system has a reference letter, it would make sense to keep it. If it doesn't, I would be comfortable getting rid of it. But I'd really want to get an answer as to whether PLUS requires it.
Could I make 3 points?
Sure.
Okay. So here are my 3 points. If the PLUS system requires it, it's going to be addressed regardless of whether it's in our rules or not, because our rules will say you need to complete the PLUS application.
Right.
Second point is we do get recommendations from our license applicants. We have a postdoctoral supervisor that's filling out a form, and obviously if they had concerns, they're going to bring that up to our attention. We have a pre-doctoral supervisor filling out. Sometimes we have several supervisors filling out, and if they have concerns, and they would probably be the best people. You know, if I ask my friend Dr. Brundage write me a recommendation, I'm guaranteeing you she's going to say good things about me. She hasn't seen my work, per se. She's seen me on the board. But she's going to give me a positive recommendation. But my supervisor, who's met with me hour after hour, if they are recommending me, that is a recommendation in a sense. So I'm just kind of I'm being a lawyer.
I'll be one too, because Dr. Brundage is on the board. She's ineligible to give a recommendation for any application. Therefore, you're out of order from the start. But clearly, everybody is going to choose the favorable foot forward. I would just like to make it as easy as possible. If that means get rid of stuff, great. If it means have one slick system that works all over the country, I'd really like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like us to move ahead with PLUS so that our applicants here in Arizona, that we got a lot of youngins that come through here, we can fill out one application and be good all over the country and never have to worry about all that paperwork collection and scrap again. So I think it would make everybody's life easier, especially an independent group that does first-party verifications and keeps all that stuff on file. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Donaldson, sir.
Yes. when I was in business and then on school board and on council, people asked me for a recommendation. And there's a lot of times politically you can't turn them down because they're a vote, right? So I would say, I don't know that much about you. Why don't you write it for me, and then I'll review it, and I'll sign it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll make you a copy of it, and I'll send you back to it, send it back to you. So if you were to ask me for a recommendation, I said, you write it for me, and I'll sign it.
Mr. Chairman?
Dr. Flowers.
Yeah, I guess I'm still concerned. You know, certainly there are a lot of people that are like mid-career applying for licensure here, and their training experiences are...
Well, it doesn't matter. They're going to get a license anyway.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Yes. That was my third point.
Okay, thank you. That's true. But I guess still it goes back to if something goes wrong, which sometimes they do, it's like... And the licensing board didn't even ask for references to see how they've been doing lately. It's, I guess, since the research doesn't really support that, it's a little bit nebulous. And frankly, it would be one less thing for us to check, which I do all the time. You know, but still, I'd feel more comfortable if we kept it. But I certainly don't speak for the whole board.
Remember, we are getting two.
Well, we've gotten our input.
Yeah, right.
We have a couple more things under this item, and then the other one that falls under this is issues on residency on the application that we want to take up as well. But we do have a timed item at 11 o'clock, so my plan is to do the timed item at 11 o'clock at 11 o'clock, and then we can... move forward with these other pieces. So it is now 11 o'clock on June 7th, 2019. This is the informal interview of Mark Mager, CIDE, in case number 1833. Board members, the material for this agenda item are located in your electronic folder. Dr. Mager, would you please come forward with your attorney? You are represented by counsel today?
Yes, that's correct.
And could I have you introduce yourselves to the board, please?
Charles Hover, attorney for Dr. Mark Major.
Mark Major.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Bohansky, chair of the board. The other board members and staff will now introduce themselves. Dr. Flower.
Present.
No, you're supposed to say who you are.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, he reminded me. I'm Dr. Flowers, psychologist member.
Dr. Malott, academic psychologist member.
Joe Donaldson, public member.
Diana Davis-Wilson, behavior analyst.
Matt Meyer, academic psychologist.
Janice Brundage, psychologist.
Also present is our representative from the Attorney General's office.
Hi, Sabrina Cohen. Jenna
our
Jones.
Staff.
Jennifer Michelson, deputy director.
Kathy Fox, licensing specialist.
Krishna Poe, administrative assistant.
Thank you all. This proceeding is being audio taped, so everyone must speak loudly, clearly, and one at a time, please. Doctor, you.
Chair, this is Dr. Davies.
Oh, I'm. Oops. You didn't point.
I failed this time.
You let me down.
Thank you. Out of sight, out of mind. I appreciate that.
I'm sorry, Dr. Dave. But you are here and present. We appreciate your input. You've received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at an informal interview. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of the case. Board members have read all the materials and any additional submissions. If it's necessary to refer to clients or patients during this interview, please do so by initials only. I will read the allegations from the informal interview notice, and then we will proceed. The complainant is here or not?
Mr. Chairman, we've tried to reach him, but he is not available.
Not available. Okay. Dr. Major, the allegations brought against you in case number 1833 are as follows: ARS 32-2061-16H for failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to psychological services provided to a client or patient; 16O for providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards and practice; and 16CC for failing to make available to a client or patient or to the client or patient's designated representative on written request a copy of the client or patient record, including raw test data, psychometric testing materials, and other information as provided by law. I will now swear you in. Doctor, if you could raise your right hand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Doctor, would you or your counsel like to make opening remarks?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Dr. Bohansky, members of the board, we are not here to contest in any meaningful way these specific allegations against Dr. Major. We are here to present ourselves, to let the board know that we are very willing to enter into a consent agreement. In fact, I would have proposed one before this, but as you are probably well aware, Dr. Major currently is on a consent agreement with the board from earlier this year. My thought was to meld the two, to include and bring into it the board's specific concerns in this matter, roll them into one. He's already agreed to, in the consent agreement, a practice monitor, continuing education. We would like to propose that that current consent agreement be modified to expand the practice monitor's duties, as well as the education that the board would prefer him to add to what he's already undergoing. Given that situation with Dr. Major, I thought it best perhaps to look the board in the eye, see what it is that you want of Dr. Major, what he needs, and to let you know that we do take this seriously, and Dr. Major is
willing and soliciting the remediation that the board would request and require, and that that is our hope and our focus in coming to this hearing today. So.
Okay. I'll go ahead and start the interview, and we will do that, sir, by starting with a case summary from the lead board member, Dr. Brundage.
Thank you, Dr. Bohansky. I would like to present case 1833, Mark Major, side D, and with a license of 40, 4010. This complaint is generated from a court-ordered psychotherapy to JY. Complainant was to complete 12 sessions within a six-month period of time, with updates provided to the courts every 60 days. Treatment was to begin October 2017. The complainant alleges that Dr. Myers did not provide any updates. Dr. Myers said he would lie to the court, frequently canceling, including a text message from Dr. Major's son indicating that the licensee was ill. No contact from Dr. Major since April 2018. When Dr. Majors was contacted, he responded in a timely fashion through his attorney, Charles Hoover. Dr. Major states that he was to provide 6 months of service September 18, 2017, and a service plan. The first session was November 12th, determined that services would extend to October 2018. The amount of session costs increased. Dr. Major states that the report, that he indicated the report was flexible after flexible scheduling, including weekends, that the that JY was out of the state and would come to Phoenix area to visit his daughter. At this time, the complainant requested contact, emails, repeatedly called, and there was never a response. So at that point, JY felt that his only course of action was to do a board complaint. That's a brief summary.
Thank you, Dr. Brundage. We then proceed with questions for Dr. Major. Do any board members have questions?
Dr. Major, I'm aware that you have a active, you are on active probation from case number 1808, that you signed a consent agreement. Do you currently have a practice monitor?
I had arranged for Wayne with Dr. Lewis, and she's not able to. Because of health reasons, I believe she's notified the board that she's not able to be doing that.
Okay. And when was the consent agreement signed? Mr. Hoover, do you know the actual date of signature?
I don't have the actual date. It was March.
Okay. So the March meeting. So what you're telling me that over the last March, April, May, June, 3 months, 3.5 months, however we want to count it, you have not been able to find a practice monitor.
I thought that I found and would be beginning with Dr. Lewis, and it only became clear the other day that that's not going to be able to be the case.
Well, I think it was the board's assumption that you would have already begun to have your practice monitored by someone. And I think that certainly we have a list of people that could be provided. Have you contacted the board and let them know that it was a problem?
This was just the other day, and I knew that this meeting was coming up, and I don't know if there would be what the requirements would be at this point.
Okay.
If I could interject, Dr. Lewis was one of three persons identified in the consent agreement. Dr. Major did make contact with the other two. One was essentially unavailable because practicing out of state. The other appeared to be too expensive, and then when he found Dr. Lewis, they were able to work that out. Dr. Lewis was, it was kind of a stop and start. I can start here, but I've got to go on vacation. Okay, I'm not feeling too well. We can work that out and get it set up until finally, I believe it was earlier this week, what is the date? Tuesday, that Dr. Lewis finally told Dr. Major that she was, because of health reasons, unable to go move forward as his clinical supervisor. So it was kind of a start-stop, trying to work out the schedule with Dr. Lewis, one of only three that had been approved by the board in that consent agreement, so trying to work within the parameters of that.
Okay. Focusing on this case, JY spent a tremendous amount of efforts to try and have you respond. Can you give me an understanding of why you never responded back?
No, I did respond back. I responded back by phone call, and that not writing to him, and not writing to him in a with return receipt or something like that is a big mistake on my part.
Okay.
He also, well, I think it was in his in August. He was confused, and he referred to me as being a therapeutic interventionist, which was not the case. I was not assigned as therapeutic interventionist. That was what would have required the reporting in every 60 days or 90 days, however the judge. It's usually every 90 days. So I don't know where he got the every 60 days from.
We actually have the court order, and it does indicate every 60 days in the minute entry. So it stated that. Secondly, so you provided a summary of the case. When was that report written?
That report was written.
We ran upstairs and grabbed one.
I believe it was in October, toward the end of October.
Okay, I'll check the record. The committee had concern with regard to you becoming ill and allowing your son to text that you were ill and that you needed to cancel that appointment. Is that a normal form for you to allow your son to text, use your phone and text to say that you won't be available?
No, neither of those is typical. A person doesn't use my phone, and I don't usually have the kind of concern about big mistake on my part to do that. I was so too concerned about who it's getting from his visitation, which he came in town for, or was coming in town for, and then being able to communicate to him about the visit being scheduled, that was scheduled to be canceled for that Sunday. And it was, quite remiss in doing that.
I have no further questions at this time.
Dr. Flower.
Yes, I have several. I'm wondering, within the recommendation or the report you did at sometime provide at the end, you made a recommendation as far as child visitation. And it wasn't clear if that was something that you chose to do or the court wanted you to do, how that came about.
So the issues that I addressed in the report were my letter of appointment was very nebulous. And what I responded in the order for and the necessity for JY to again be in therapy. Were in response to a report that had been done by an independent evaluation that had been done by another psychologist, and was it also included, that independent evaluation had also included interview with the child's mother in this case. And so things that I addressed were in relation, in the report, were in response to, in relation to the course of therapy, screening that I did with him, evaluation, re-evaluation on some things, and that was in response to the report and items that were referred to in the report. For example, there was a whole bunch of communications between father and mother that were, if you read them all and in detail, which I did, they referred to not a psychotic process at all, not a psychotic process, but characters in like internet games and mythic, so the use of metaphor and stuff like that in each other's mutual.
Okay, well, I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, if I didn't really see that you were involved in a custody issue, you were asked to give like intensive psychotherapy. And I wasn't clear if you ever met with the child. And then I see a recommendation for that he have child visitation privileges and so forth. So it, and saw that your son in the text message to the father was, you know, that you have his back and so forth, and not to worry about things. So, you know, it got kind of confusing how you could make that recommendation and what for.
So my son's comment there was with regard to rescheduling.
Oh, well, then he could, well, he made some, plus he made some comments, you know, as well. And then also, I didn't really see any kind of entries about meetings you had with him after April. I think there was a certain time that he was to see you, and then he started asking for the report. And I was puzzled as to why he would ask for a report if the treatment had not been done yet.
Right.
And then looking through the notes, I didn't see any entries for those, for that, those several months. So I was confused about that. Some of the notes were hard to read.
Okay. Well, so there were, and there should be notes there, for 12 months of face-to-face meetings, as well as 6 months of, there was 6 additional months of each month there was, that there was face-to-face, there was also a telephone meeting. And then there was also telephone meetings for an additional 6 months. There should be
okay, but yeah, I guess there's some missing notes on that. Okay, and also didn't really see that you did a psychodiagnostic interview. From what I gathered, you used one that was done previously and just went with the recommendations.
No, there was. Well, I engaged him. In the first meeting, an interview, there were it was a handwritten.
I did say that you wrote things almost kind of like an agreement, but I didn't really see that as a psychodiagnostic workup. Okay. So anyway, those are questions, observations. Thank you.
What was your role in this case, Doctor?
To be providing therapy.
To be providing therapy.
Court-ordered
therapy.
Yeah.
To what end?
To address issues that were raised in the independent psychological evaluation. The JY had gone ahead and, prior to meeting with me, had gone ahead and done 6 months of therapy that was not goes out of state and wasn't with a wasn't with under the aegis of the, or approval of the state or so forth. So then he wound up having to re-engage.
Oh, this is someone who's had therapy.
Yeah.
And you're going to continue his therapy to assist him with...
Well, the issues of... what was essentially tagged was issues of anger management or stress and stress management and being able to deal with those sorts of things.
So you're assisting him in dealing with stress management, and one of the approaches appears to be not responding to his issues.
Well, not engaging. Well, not in, I get what you're saying.
He's stressed out, calling you, contacting you constantly, and you're not responding, but you're seeing him to help him lower his stress.
And to come up with alternative methods of being able to head that off. Yes. And so that I responded with telephone contact with him, and okay. Poor choices on my part.
To start your therapy, you started with a Raytan, Indiana?
No.
So the one that
I started with the diagnostic initial trip planning kind of interview, meeting, initial interview.
And but you felt it necessary to do a mini neuropsych eval?
Yeah. Some of the issues, yes, because of the issues that were raised.
And he already had a psych eval?
Yeah, psych eval. Some of these issues were raised, but they weren't really addressed in the psych eval, but raised questions about them, and they seemed to be the key areas of concern. And there were other concerns that were raised, like mother going through this as well, and so on and so forth.
So the aphasia screening battery and the Bender Gestalt are things you administer to start therapy with someone who's has anger and stress issues.
I didn't do this right initially with him, but a little bit later on, in order to get a sort of take a temperature on how things were and where he was functioning at, how he was processing, all of that. Right. There were no additional charges or fees for doing. I ported him a flat rate and stayed with that.
Okay. I guess I'm looking for a service plan or a rationale for what you're doing and looking for some cohesion in the process of what you're doing. I expect to see something that either addresses the concern or addresses the results or somehow ties in with some direction, but I'm at a loss with the way you keep notes. Anyone else have questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Flower.
I thought of another one here. Within the, there's an amended treatment plan you put together, it looks like, on the 18th of September of 2017. And it talked about that the client would waive the issue of privacy in regards to phone, fax, FedEx, email to communicate and to send reports to attorneys at the end of treatment. And did you discuss with him, like, telemedicine-type issues and check to see the pros and cons of that?
We discussed it. I didn't spell it out in kind of a separate acceptable fashion. One of my concerns with that for him was that he He lives near the Arizona border, and issues of telemedicine and things like this. And so dealing with state lines and so forth, and the assurance that he gave me was that he would be coming over into Arizona to make calls at set times.
That way they wouldn't need to worry about California licensure kind of thing.
Right. Although with the AS, right, because with the ASPBB thing, there's having that stricter mobility that, I mean, I didn't want to go, and we talked about that initially. I wasn't going to go make application for a California license for this. It would have been somewhat easy to do. None of those processes are easy, so it would have only been somewhat easy, and they give you, like, 6 months before you have to sit for the state exam. It wouldn't have been worthwhile. So then he gave me assurances about that he'd be able to come over into Arizona for the phone calls. That seemed reasonable and accommodating, because he wasn't going to,
So it sounds as if you were not aware that there's an expectation of giving, like, every 60 days an update to the court or anything?
No, I wasn't aware of of doing that with this until the matter was completed.
Okay, because there are some court orders specifying that, and I believe you specifying you as the person to serve that function. But then I saw the treatment plan you made saying is they'll just do one report at the end of a year.
Yeah.
So I don't know how clearly that was understood by the client.
My letter of appointment was very vague, and there may well have been other minute entries, but I could have pushed for or tried to get administrative clarification or bring an issue to the fore and so on.
I have a question. Dr. Major, were you provided with a copy of the I'm assuming you were provided with a copy of the minute entry?
The minute entry appointing me.
But did you see it?
Yeah.
It was pretty clear to me.
Well, I don't have it in front of me right now. The minute entry that, as I recall it, it was, the part about me was just like, that I'm appointed to do intensive psychotherapy, and didn't really define anything.
I thought I read the 60 days loud and clear. Go ahead.
Dr. Favre.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. What I see was there's a court order on the 27th of February 2017 that said that the therapist would provide written updates to the party's counsel record at least every 60 days. And then a minute entry of May 26, 17, saying that you're provided the intensive psychotherapy. So reason may dictate you're that person. Right. You see what I mean? They would find somebody, they found you, and you were that person. Within the minute entry you received, it didn't really spell that out.
Right.
It just said, you're the one going to give intensive psychotherapy. But then it appeared that they were acting on the other court order to find somebody, and you were the person. So did you seek clarification from the court what they wanted other than psychotherapy?
With the reports, no. I thought that what they wanted was a report at the end. See that.
Okay, was there a court order on that?
No.
So, but it looks like within the one-page thing I saw, the amended contract was, you said, after a full year. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Other questions? Hearing none. We will move on. Is anyone representing complainant here? Any requests from complainant on phone or otherwise? No.
No, sir.
Doctor, do you or legal counsel have any additional comments or remarks?
Thank you. Just a couple of points of clarification. Dr. Brundage, I did get back into my files, and the initial order in the other matter was signed by the board on March 27th, and Dr. Major, through me, sent Dr. Lewis's designation as the chosen practice monitor on April 5th. So that's when all of that activity began. Dr. Flowers, thank you for clarifying what I understood was that there was basically a generic appointment of a therapist that did spell out the 60 days, but in the subsequent order specifically identifying Dr. Major, there was no discussion in that order as to a schedule of reports. But acknowledging that once that appointment is made, there was a duty to probably go back and look and just get the other minute entries, see what the entire process was and involved and what the expectations were. So just wanted to make those two points of clarification, and again to reiterate that understood the board's concerns and willing to work with the board as it deems necessary. Thank you.
Doctor, do you have any other comments you'd like to make?
I mean, I've been looking at how I did things, and in terms of clarity of record keeping, legibility of record keeping as well.
I'm pretty horrible.
Pardon?
It's pretty horrible.
Yeah, my handwriting is unfortunately, I've gotten used to reading it. And that's really not good. So, taking notes, and I've got Dragon Speaks, so taking notes, but then to dictate afterwards, and I'll go back to.
All right, board will now deliberate. If we could, please, would anyone like to start off? Dr. Brundage.
Dr. Major, I am really concerned about...
Deliberate, not to him, to us.
Correct. I'm very concerned about the issues. If I could, I would like to indicate to the board the report that Dr. Major wrote December 2nd, 2018. Now, he indicated he wrote it in October. It was written December 2nd, 2018. It's page 43 to 53 of the report. I would like to note that also on page 67, the service agreement that he signed September 17th, 2017. So that's a fairly long period of time. The note that we keep referring to in the minute entry is page 78, which is that the parties understand that it is the expectation that the therapist shall provide written update to the parties, counsel of record, at least every 60 days. So we have fairly substantial information that it was not followed through by the orders of the court. I am concerned on how he treated this patient. I feel that the constant, if we review some of the emails that had gone by to JW, this person was pretty angry, and to me those would have indicated volatility. This would be the last person that I would just freeze out on any kind of contact. I think he made efforts, first texting, first emails, and then certified letters, and all of them went unanswered. I know that the attorney has requested that we kind of combine this, but I see this as a very distinct, different issue than the complaint that he had seen before. I also am extremely concerned that he did not follow through with the recommendations. He knew he had this complaint. I believe that if he had been prudent, I would be working really, really hard to find someone and at least have a session or two before I arrive here again. I'm wondering if he's regulatory, if we can regulate his practice. He just seems to continue to drag his feet. So I do believe that there's further action, and I would like to hear from other members.
Thank you.
And I would agree with kind of your stance there. And one of the things that continues to stand out for me, and it was present today, it's been present in other conversations, is the inconsistency in responses. I too would have probably done everything to make sure I understood coming into even the meeting today what was expected of me and what responses I would be giving pertinent to the questions that could have come today. And for me, I feel like there's still inconsistencies. There's reports that the correspondence became over the phone, yet the individual is reporting that he was unable to reach the doctor by the phone. And so I think that there's just several inconsistencies there. I do also have, and I am not a practicing psychologist, but I do also have some concerns with this idea of expecting a patient to cross a border, an hour and a half, 2 hours to cross a border to ensure that licensure requirements don't need to be met to continue to serve an individual.
Mr. Donaldson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have everybody's concerns, you know. Particularly, I have one about how do you know he is in Arizona?
Right.
That's, yeah, right. lack of communication. And as a public member, I'm wondering why he has a license. But I see here in his answers here today, they're inconsistent. I just wonder if he knows what he's talking about. Major concern.
Dr. Flower?
Yes, I underscore many of the same things that you well mentioned, but it just seems like some very basic things, reason for the interview, what they're coming from, what is needed, certainly court orders. I get scared whenever I talk to attorneys or courts. It's like I want to know precisely what I need. Make careful that everything's done correctly, and there's some sloppiness there. Didn't appear to be a substantial psychodiagnostic interview when this thing was started by the doctor, and then the needed follow-up coordination, it's all lacking, and then even kind of a lack of clarity about the role and giving recommendations as far as custody, visitation, that's a whole different arena. And then, of course, they're not following up on the many phone calls and email messages, kind of crazy-making, and then lack of records for many, many things and lack of legibility. So, you know, there are some extensive things that would need to be looked at and dealt with.
Dr. Meyer.
I would agree that we've seen a pattern of problems at this point, and would also recommend going further with restriction to license.
I have stated my concerns on this case before, and the list is lengthy. This board has a consent agreement that he's not participating in. Why would he participate in another one? You're referred a case by a court and you're not sure what to go on. The first thing you do is call the court and say, what would you like? That, to me, is what a reasonable psychologist would do. Before striking out on a course of what have you, making custody recommendations when you're assigned a therapy job and you're not doing a custody evaluation is tantamount to malpractice as far as I'm concerned. You're outside of scope. And the basics are not here. The basic record keeping, basic professional, I struggle to go through the progress notes and read what was there and to make sense out of it and to follow a trail. And I don't know if anybody could. I couldn't. And I And I really tried. I tried to understand, where do you start? Where do you go? Why do you make a decision? And how does it match up to the reports that are typed? And the notes don't. It's almost like they're on different people. So I'm frustrated and confused, and I agree with the comment. I'm not sure it's regulatable. Dr. Brundage.
Dr. Bohansky, is this person a harm to the public? Because at this point, he's got a consent agreement. We've asked him to do probation. It isn't our we provided three names, but I believe a caveat always in practice monitoring is we will provide three names. If something doesn't work out, please call the board staff and we'll expand that. That's usually set in this mm-hmm. court area. I'm really concerned about his ability to practice safely at all. And do we look at a formal hearing for suspension? Or, I mean, I don't think Dr. Major gets it.
Other thoughts, comments?
So I share concerns. It's very troubling if he were to continue to practice. I think he'd need some very close monitoring, supervision, because it appears some of the very basics are not currently operational. If he were like a staff member, I'd want to review everything he did, make sure he knows how to do proper notes, intakes, because right now it's questionable.
Our duty is to protect the public. Mm-hmm. How do we make that happen?
Could we, this is a thought, I'm thinking of Dr. Major's current caseload and abandonment issues and things like that. Could we ask that, you know, that he not practice till he's found a supervisor, a practice monitor, and he's working under close supervision? But I'm just throwing that out.
Dr. Brundage.
Dr. Bohansky, I would love to go that route. But that's assuming there will be follow-up and follow-through. And I think that evident in this case is that the services provided are below the scope of what we would expect from a professional psychologist. So maintaining those folks doing poor therapy or questioning therapy at all, I struggle.
And I would say, kind of to Dr. Flower's point, too, my concern with just practice monitoring is that it's usually a percentage of or a certain number of hours of, and I think it needs to be more than that. And I think it's going to be difficult to find somebody who, I mean, in the other consent agreement, finding someone has been difficult to rein that in and say, now we need someone to watch everything and oversee everything. I think that's going to be difficult to find as well.
I agree. Does anyone have a motion? Dr. Brundage.
May I ask a question to our attorney?
Certainly.
If it's legal advice, it has to be an executive session.
If it's legal advice, if it's a question, she can answer it.
Maybe she can pose the question. If you think it's advice, then we'll go into executive. Do you want to?
What are our legal options?
There you go. I move that we go into executive session.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We are in executive session. The board will leave the room. We're back in regular session. We are still in deliberation phase. regarding Dr. Major's case. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none. Does anyone have a motion that they would like to put forward for discussion?
I can start. Were you going to?
Go ahead.
No, I was thinking that, I am concerned with Dr. Major's, ability to work with clients at the moment and his follow-through, his attention to detail. There were a lot of concerns that were expressed today based on what he said. I was concerned with just his current clients as well, what's going on, how is he tracking, is he following through. So I'm wondering whether we should do a fitness for duty evaluation. So that's one thing that I'm wondering. The other thing is, the practice monitor, having a practice monitor, but I'm not sure whether that can be addressed right now. So,
go ahead.
Yes, Dr. Rundage.
Asking for legal clarification, I still am a little bit confused, but I would like to make a motion to open a complaint officially. The official complaint has been opened, but I don't know if we do a consent agreement, a modified, interim consent agreement on this case or the previous case?
This case.
Thank you. And within that, dictate that he be able to seek a fitness for duty within a prescribed period of time, 30 days, 35 days, or whatever is legally defined, and have that report to the board within that period of time. And then after that report is given, then to find out if there's other action that needs to be taken.
Do we have an in-person board meeting in August?
Yeah, August.
Okay, so I'd like it maybe by the August meeting, a completed report. Could you?
I'd like it before then.
Well,
35 days, and then you're right. 35 days is plenty. And then it's to be ready for the next board.
There also had been a discussion with the fitness of duty. The hope would be that Ms. Jones, our executive director, could provide some names. Perhaps you would provide names, and then someone is chosen and followed through immediately.
I would suggest just getting the names from Ms. Jones and expedite the process. Is that I'm sure that's someone that would be acceptable immediately.
Okay, we're in deliberation, not.
Okay. Dr. Bohinski, since the motion was for an interim consent agreement for a fitness for duty evaluation, I would ask him to see if they're open to that and see if that's something that they want to do. Are you open to that?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Then do I have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second now. Discussion. Accomplished within 35 days?
Correct.
And this is a interim consent agreement?
It's an interim consent agreement for a fitness for duty evaluation to be completed within 35 days. The executive director will be the final determinant as to who the evaluator will be. And then also, do you have any specifications for the evaluation in and of itself, or just kind of a standard of fitness for duty evaluation that's done by the psychology board? Is that something that you do in the practice?
Focusing on cognitive,
okay.
And I also like to see the practice monitor in place immediately.
Well, I'd like it to be a fuller one. Maybe there's other issues.
Okay.
So it would be a roll call for the interim consent agreement.
And that means that this case is continued?
Correct.
Yes. Because we will review the report at our next in person.
And you can include a motion to continue this as well in your motion for the interim consent agreement.
I think Dr. Brundage started the motion.
Dr. Brundage. Yes. Okay, so Dr. Brundage made the motion.
Yes.
And it was seconded by Dr. Malott.
By Mr. Donaldson.
Excuse me.
Sorry, we are sitting close by. So okay. That's okay.
Just to clarify, because I'm not sure if you caught that they are looking for the full evaluation, not just the focus on cognitive, but looking at others as well.
Okay, so a full evaluation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know if she caught that one.
Mover in second degree?
Yes.
Council is in agreement?
Yes, sir.
Roll call?
Yes.
Ms. Poe, if you would.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Mr. Donaldson?
Yes.
Dr. Brundage?
Yes.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
Dr. Flowers?
Yes.
We have 8 votes of yes. Motion passes.
Thank you. Then this matter is continued, and Ms. Jones will be in touch with counsel, or they'll talk and move forward. And what we're going to do now is come back at 1:25, and we have a 1:30 call, which will be quick, and then we can get to these other rules issues and move forward. Then we have an executive session after that. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a personal note, I have worked with Jennifer when she was at the Board of Behavioral Health, and I just want to share with you, you've got a good one.
We got the all-star team here now.
Thank you.
Thank you.